This is a message for members of Thrivent Financial for Lutherans. Thrivent Financial has a new charitable grant program called Thrivent Choice. Thrivent Choice allows you to designate charitable outreach funds to Lutheran Public Radio. For more information, look for the Thrivent logo under the Donate page of our website, issuesetc.org, or ask your Thrivent representative about Thrivent Choice. Help support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. with Thrivent Choice.
Think of a sick man racked with pain and fear. Think of a dying woman terrified by the coming darkness. There will be hands reaching out to comfort them and feed them and warm them. There will be voices of kindness and reassurance. There will be soft beds and sweet hymns and consolation and joy. All those kindly hands and sweet voices will do their work so willingly because they know that one man died and rose again, and that this truth is enough to cancel out all the evil in the world, even if it never happened.
That's Philip Pullman reading from his new book, The Good Man, Jesus, and the Scoundrel Christ. He's known for his Dark Materials books that preceded this, and now he takes on Jesus himself, takes apart Jesus himself into Jesus and Christ. Joining us to review Philip Pullman's book, The Good Man, Jesus, and the Scoundrel Christ, Dr. Craig Hazen. He's professor of comparative religion and apologetics at Biola University in Southern California, and he's author of the books Five Sacred Crossings and The Village Enlightenment in America. Dr. Hazen, welcome to Issues Etc.
Good to be with you, Todd. Boy, I wish I'd heard that audio book. That sounds fascinating to hear Philip Pullman read this text in his own voice.
What do you think Pullman is trying to accomplish in The Good Man Jesus and the Scoundrel Christ?
You know, he's simply telling us what he thinks Jesus is like, and he's doing so, unfortunately, apart from any shred of historical evidence. He's just throwing it out there, and in fact, I get the sense at one point in the book, I mean, it just kind of dawned on me, oh my goodness, Philip Pullman is Jesus. The way he's describing them, you can just tell Philip Pullman probably lives his life the way that this Jesus character in the book lives his life. But I think this is a manifesto trying to shed light on the way he sees it should have really been, even if it wasn't.
Who is Philip Pullman for those who aren't familiar with him?
You know, he's a very famous children's author. He is a multi-gazillionaire, I'm sure, given all of the books he has sold. He's most famous for his children's book series called His Dark Materials. And some of your listeners may be familiar with not his books, but the movie that was made out of one of his books called The Golden Compass here in North America. It starred Nicole Kidman, and it did fairly well at the box office, but Philip Pullman purists didn't really like the movie all that much. But nonetheless, you really get a sense for the man, even in that book, and his views towards religion and the church.
So can you describe this book in terms of how he populates it with the various characters, namely Jesus and Christ, and how things proceed from there?
You know, for committed Christians who read the New Testament on a regular basis, it's actually hard to sort this out at first because he keeps referring to Jesus and then Christ, and we have to come along and understand that these are two different people. You see, Todd, in case you weren't familiar with this, Mary gave birth to identical twins in the manger. You know. And actually, she laid one in the manger, and one was left to rummage around on the floor. And but there they were, the twins, who would go on to pull off probably the greatest hoax in human history.
So one is Jesus.
Yes.
And the other is Christ. I assume Jesus, according to the title, turns out to be kind of the Jesus that Pullman wants Jesus to be. What's the Christ like?
The Christ at first, you have a fondness for him. He's a kid who really doesn't have it all together. Jesus is strong and handsome and popular. Christ is really the young nerd, the scholar. The kid who wants to be liked by not just his peers, but by older men in Jewish society, and so he works very hard at understanding the Hebrew scriptures. But Jesus outshines him every step of the way, starting with their birth in the stable.
And does he follow kind of the biblical narrative here? Does he take us basically through the plot line laid out by the gospel writers of the New Testament?
He does. In fact, I wrote some notes in my own copy of the book saying, why in the world did he even include this story? You know, there are certain pericopes or certain gospel chunks that he puts in the book that really don't carry his story along, but they're prominent in the New Testament. I think he really wanted this to have a kind of New Testament feel to it. But not only that, you get the sense when you read this book that Philip Pullman has a deep fondness somewhere in his soul toward the New Testament and towards the person of Jesus. Now, it might be a Jesus of his own making, but somewhere along the line, he had close encounters of the real thing.
So, is this kind of an, you said a manifesto, is this an atheist answer to, or revisionist history, or is wishful thinking? How would you characterize this on the part of Pullman's part?
Well, he, you know, the way he wrote it, he could easily just say it was a story. It's a retelling of a myth is what, it's actually in a series where myths are being retold. And so this is a standalone book in that series. So I'm sure he can just point to that, that he thinks this is a myth, and so it therefore could be revised if he'd like. He's not doing revisionist history because there was no history involved in the first place. You know, I'm not sure if Philip Pullman would even agree that Jesus was a historical figure at all, but he felt very free to retell the whole thing. And in some way, the Jesus character resonated with him, probably as a boy. I think he did grow up attending church. But he has, as it comes through in his book series, His Dark Materials, he really has it out for the church, he has it out for God, and he has it out for any kind of supernatural manifestation. He clearly thinks that that's the greatest evil on the face of the earth and in the history of humankind.
So if the Jesus character is kind of the all-American boy, the Christ character is the somewhat sympathetic but ultimately deceived and deceiving scoundrel, there's a third character that he simply calls the Stranger. He said in an interview I listened to that the Stranger is the spirit of the church. Picking up on what you just said, talk about that if you would.
Well, I'm glad you said that because I had heard that interview, but that's what I assumed, that the Stranger was the spirit of the church. As the two grow up, the separation becomes more dramatic, and they become more polarized figures, the Jesus and Christ. And it's especially prominent at the scene of Jesus' baptism, and then the scene of the temptation in the wilderness. And that's where they have a dialogue, and they kind of part ways for good at that point. But it's not long thereafter that Christ runs into the Stranger. And after bumping into the Stranger in odd places a few times, Christ begins to think this is an angel, you know, just like the angels told about in the Old Testament literature. He is disabused of that after a period of time, but we're never really told who this Stranger is, but the Stranger plays a very important role. He pops in at just the right moment to collect scrolls from Christ. You see, Christ is writing down what Jesus is doing all along, and he's got an informant among the disciples. So if he's not there in person, he's able to get the scoop from kind of a spy on the inside, presumably Judas. And he's writing this material down, and the Stranger comes in to collect the scrolls, and he really encourages the Christ in one particular thing. Look, he says, you know, don't worry too much about truth. We need to be concerned about history. And what history is kind of a version of the truth that will help humankind out. And so it sounds kind of noble and forward-looking, but this Stranger, this spirit of the church, is basically a corrupt entity that takes the true story of Jesus and turns it into a twisted history that simply pushes forward the designs and the malicious intent of the burgeoning Christian movement.
So who does Philip Pullman's Jesus in the novel claim to be?
He just claims to be a good teacher who really does care about the plight of human beings. He's certainly not perfect. He certainly cannot perform miracles. Any deed he performs that has quite an impact on people, Christ, when he records it in his scroll, adds to it so that it becomes a supernatural event. Pullman's dead set against miracles.
And so it sounds like, at least at the outset here, what Pullman is doing is, in a novelized form, he's offering his explanation of how we may have got from, not literally, but kind of in a parable form, his explanation of how we got from a historical figure of Jesus who may or may not have existed to what people believe about Jesus now.
Right. And, you know, it's not an unusual take on this subject. I mean, I went to grad school, a very secular religious studies program, and when we did some study of New Testament or Christian origins, that's basically the take that the liberal professors would have on this. That somehow, we all know that miracles don't happen, so there's got to be an explanation. And the explanation is these were probably concocted by the early church, who had wonderful things in mind when they were doing this. I mean, they really wanted people to believe and to be helped by this message, but they had to give it some punch, and so they threw in miracles. That's exactly what Philip Pullman does in this short children's novel.
It's Tuesday afternoon, August the 24th. Are you familiar with Philip Pullman's books? Our call-in number, 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-6943. Our email address right here in the studio, talkback@issuesetc.org, talkback@issuesetc.org, or send us a tweet at issuesetc. ETC. Dr. Craig Hazen is our guest. We're reviewing Philip Pullman's newest book, The Good Man Jesus and the Scoundrel Christ. Dr. Hazen is professor of comparative religion and apologetics at Biola University in Southern California and author of the books Five Sacred Crossings and The Village Enlightenment in America. When we come back, more of this review, and we'll round off today's issues, etc.
Did you know that you can listen to Issues Etc. live on most smartphones? Just go to the Listen Live page of our website, issuesetc.org, click the smartphone link, and you can listen on your smartphone weekday afternoons between 3 to 5 Central. Old Theology, New Technology, Issues Etc. now broadcasting live to the world on most smartphones. Issues Etc. issuesetc.org.
Issues Etc. is listener-supported. That means we rely on you for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Hi, this is Todd Wilkin. Please consider making a tax-deductible gift to Issues Etc. today. You can donate online, issuesetc.org, or by check. Make your check payable to Lutheran Public Radio and send it to LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Thanks for your support.
Defending the faith, teaching the truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Here are two new ways to stay connected to Issues Etc., Facebook and Twitter. You'll find photos of in-studio guests at facebook.com/issuesetc, and you'll find a list of upcoming topics and guests on Twitter at issuesetc. Social networking for the thinking Christian, facebook.com/issuesetc, and on Twitter at issuesetc. Connect with fellow Issues Etc. junkies today, facebook.com/issuesetc, and on Twitter at issuesetc.
Thanks to God's gift of the Internet, people are listening to Issues Etc. around the world.
Hi, this is Ville calling from Finland. I believe the day will come when you cannot enter the office as a pastor in the ELCA unless you subscribe to the ordination of gays and lesbians. And why do I believe that? Because Americans are sinners like we Finns are.
Listen to what you want, when you want, wherever you are. IssuesETC.org.
I was intrigued, you see, by the difference between the two parts of the name Jesus Christ that we commonly use interchangeably. So I thought, well, maybe there is a difference. Maybe there are two beings here, not one. Christ is this complicated character, and I call him a scoundrel in the title, but as we soon come to see, he's not so much of a scoundrel as a confused man. Christ is like a figure in a novel. he's the only figure in the story who is like a figure in a novel, because he's the only one who's made up.
That's Philip Pullman commenting on his new book, The Good Man, Jesus, and the Scoundrel, Christ. Dr. Craig Hazen is our guest. The last 10 minutes of the program today, we continue our review of Philip Pullman's latest book. Dr. Hazen, let's talk about the hoax that forms the climax and the end of this novel.
Yes.
What do they do together, and how does it come about that following the basic pattern of the biblical account of Christ's suffering, death, and resurrection, nothing is as it really seems?
Right. Well, Jesus becomes a very popular figure, and the religious leaders are getting a little bit annoyed at this because they have plans for the religious future of their people. And Jesus's brother Christ is enlisted to help out. At first he's reluctant, but he's convinced by the stranger and some religious leaders to join in, that this would be for the good of humankind in the long run. And he helps lead the temple police to Christ in the garden. They take him, this is where it gets difficult. We're used to interchanging the words. Christ takes the temple police to Jesus in the garden, and Christ then points him out in a Judas fashion, so they collect Jesus and take him into custody. He goes before the high priest. He goes before Pilate. He's condemned to the cross. He's nailed to the cross, and he dies a very difficult death on the cross. And his legs are indeed broken. He's taken down from the cross, and he's put in the tomb. And the following day, Christ witnesses men carrying Jesus, the dead Jesus, his corpse, out of the tomb to dispose of it. And Christ then appears to the women, to the disciples, to the men on the road to Emmaus as the risen Jesus. And this is written into the scrolls. And in some ways, Christ is a bit ashamed of it, but the hoax is complete. And the text actually comes to life at that moment, saying that the followers of Jesus were emboldened to preach this message. You know, that part of the story is true. In fact, every historian who looks at these things, they're unanimous on the idea that there were disciples and that they had some sort of transformation. So Philip Pullman gets that right, but his ultimate explanation is they were viewing not the risen Jesus, but his identical twin brother, Christ, who came on the scene at just the right moment.
Jeannie via email asks, why do atheists and agnostics fight so hard against belief, concocting twin fables, etc.?
Yeah, they've got to deal with it in some way. They certainly don't think that miracles take place, so they're not going to bow their head to a resurrection of any sort, or any miracle, really. And so they've got to come up with some sort of naturalistic explanation. Now, if you're a theist or a person who believes that there is a God who could, if he wished to, intervene in human affairs, it's really not a stretch that he could bring somebody back from the dead or heal a leper or cast out a demon. But the question is there good evidence to believe that those things happened? And it turns out there is plenty of evidence, and God was not shy in leaving us quite a trail of evidence back to these events in the first century, and Philip Pullman really needs to get on that trail and do a little mining.
They seem to assume, atheists, especially the new brand of atheists, that they can play fast and loose with the narrative here because none of it ever happened, and there is no real good evidence that any of it ever happened. Their explanation, they would assert, even if it's in a novelistic form like Pullman's, is as good as anyone else's explanation. Talk about that evidence, especially the eyewitness accounts that we have in the New Testament documents, that should be taken seriously at the very least, even by skeptics.
Yes, you know, even the harshest critics of the Christian position, But these are people who study these ancient historical events. If they have solid degrees and they're major players in sort of historical Jesus studies, they almost all agree that Jesus was indeed a historical figure and that he was killed by a Roman crucifixion team in first century Palestine. But ironically, that exact same body of evidence that led skeptics and unbelievers to agree that Jesus was a historical figure and that he was killed by a crucifixion team is the exact same body of evidence, you know, usually just one page over, that tells us he came back from the dead in his own body on the third day. So it seems to me it's really not about the evidence at that point. It's about a scholar's worldview. Are they willing to be open to a miracle if the evidence is clear and compelling that one has taken place?
Someone might say, look, just as a novel, this is intriguing. They'll say, okay, I don't buy any of it, but it's intriguing. Make the case, if you would, that the real Jesus, the Jesus who is both God and man, who is the Son of God, who did do what the eyewitnesses in the New Testament say he did with unanimity, is far more intriguing than any Jesus we can make up.
Oh, my goodness, yes. This really is. The story of Jesus is the encapsulation of all human hopes and all human dreams, as say they come through in fairy tales. This really is the great fairy tale come true, as J.R.R. Tolkien and C.S. Lewis made clear. You know, here it is, a sin creeps into the world and humanity dies. And we lay there in a state of suspended animation until the prince comes in and through his efforts, not our own, awaken us to his presence. And we live happily ever after. That is the gospel story. But it's also the core of any great story that moves you at the deepest level.
So then finally, compare and contrast the Jesus of Scripture versus the one, the Jesus, that Philip Pullman presents in Good Man, Jesus, Scoundrel, Christ.
Well, again, I'm actually surprised how much of the gospel material Philip Pullman inserts into his book, sometimes in a twisted way, sometimes in a straight-up way. It's as if, in fact, you know, he's an old school teacher, and I got the sense that he really wanted to teach the children some things about Jesus, so he includes some things in his book that didn't necessarily carry his story forward. So he's enamored of Jesus, but he's enamored of a Jesus who wants to feed the hungry and wants to do kind of a healer's touch through caring in people's lives, not through raising people up to walk again or to cast out demons that to bedevil them. So the Jesus that Philip Pullman ends up with is a wonderful person, really. I mean, you'd love to be neighbors with this guy, but he's certainly no savior for humankind, and he's really not going to bring anything more than the wrath of the religious leaders whose finger he was sticking in their eye on a regular basis. That's the Jesus of Philip Pullman. And it's all, and at the end of the day, in his book, it's all just a big mess.
Dr. Craig Hazen is director of the Master of Arts and Christian Apologetics and professor of Comparative Religion and Apologetics at Biola University in Southern California. He's author of the books Five Sacred Crossings and The Village Enlightenment in America. Thank you very much.
My pleasure, Todd.
Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we'll talk to Dr. Jean Edward Veith of Patrick Henry College about youth ministry and what he calls stupid church tricks. That's tomorrow on Issues Etc. The real deal and the real story is far more fascinating, actually more plausible than any kind of hoodwink, let's carry off a hoax explanation of what happened. Now, if you reject out of hand that God exists or that he intervenes in his creation, it is really hard to deal with Jesus. More serious atheists try and do it. They say, yeah, he's a good ethical teacher. But wasn't it C.S. Lewis who said you can't do that with him? Not with the Jesus we find in the New Testament, which probably explains why so many people want to disregard the Jesus we find in the New Testament. Lewis says, if you only want an ethical teacher, you never get there with Jesus because of who he claimed he is and what he claimed he would do. At the very best, you're dealing with a lunatic, you're dealing with someone who is pathological liar, or, as Lewis says, he's got to be the guy he says he is. So you can't settle for good ethical teacher Jesus. It's amazing how much our imagination will try and come up with anything other than the real deal. The real deal, the real story, is far more compelling, and in the end, it is true. That's why it is so compelling. A Jesus who is, in fact, both God and man, who is born of the Virgin Mary for one purpose, and that is to stand as substitute before the wrath of God and the punishment for all of our sin and death itself in my place and your place. That this Jesus, who taught and lived and did his miracles and gathered a following and lost his following, laid down his life at the cross for you, for me, that is compelling because that is true. I'm Todd Wilkin. Talk with you again tomorrow. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Lutheran Public Radio, P.O. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.